personalizing content experiences, personalizing marketing, showing people that you know them, and making sure that the stuff that you put out couldn't have been put out by anyone else is critical. And so I've learned that by doing, for sure.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise a glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. I am Jonathan Gandolf, co-founder and CEO of The Juice and host of today's episode. I am thrilled to be joined by another co-founder and chief strategy officer of Market News, Jeff Coyle. Jeff and I have known each other for quite some time. Jeff's one of the early kind of adopters of The Juice and early kind of mentors to me. We share some commonalities, not only in the MarTech space, but in the brewing space as well, which we'll get into. I'm thrilled to have Jeff today. I always enjoy our conversations with him. Before I ramble too much, Jeff, why don't, in your own words, share a little bit about your background and what you are up to at MarketViews?
Sure. Yes, as you mentioned, I'm Jeff Coyle. I'm the co-founder, chief strategy officer for MarketViews. MarketViews is a content strategy, content intelligence platform, really focused on quality and performance. So we've been, now about 10 years in market, but my world of product management, search engine design, started in the late 90s. And I've been in the search engine, whether I'm building search engines or trying to optimize content for search engines, for quite some time. I led the traffic search and engagement team at TechTarget after my first company, KnowledgeStorm, was acquired by them in 2007. And I have been trying to focus on common painful workflows that content teams, SEOs, editorial leads, editors have, and so that, you know, they can unify around what makes content amazing and build content strategies that they can all be proud of and perform. Right now, I just launched a solution called Content Strategy AI, and it is the world's first automated cluster analysis, quality analysis, content planning, and the leading edge of content brief development. Something I'm extremely excited about, and it is truly novel. It takes advantage of our unique data, keyword data, knowledge graph data, search results, databases, and 10 years of AI development to build amazing things like on-the-nose, human-in-the-loop, customized brief in 3 minutes that would have taken you 10, 15 hours to build.
This is incredible. Yeah, I joined, the product launch demo of that, and it was pretty impressive how powerful that was. So I'm excited to dig into not only MarketViews' history, your history as well. It's got to be a special fraternity of folks that have been in the search space for that long. It's like, you know, we it's easy to throw out like, oh, search is evolving faster than ever. And it's like, well, actually, like the invention of search engines, like there's all these kind of like mile markers along the way where it's like search is evolving. So like it's just always evolving and always changing. So excited to dig into all of that. Jeff, it is the Content Cocktail Hour, so we always like asking our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
Oh, gosh. The thing I'm most excited about was, and I haven't been able to get to my brewery in Brunswick, Silver Bluff Brewing Company. I haven't been able to get down there in a bit, but we just put out in the end of August our Fest beer, and it's available in the local market and at our tap room, and beautiful can. And so I was lucky enough to grab some of that, and I've been happily having a lot of that. And it's somewhere, if you're familiar with, you know, a Märzen, which would be a little bit of a more amber colored, a little maltier, or like a Helles lager, which is more of a lighter Oktoberfest brew. It's somewhere down the middle of those two. So it's a really unique and special.
I love it. I'm a big Fest beer fan as well myself. I mentioned this a little bit in the intro, but you and I both co-founded a brewery as well in a previous life and still stay involved. I remember the brewery I founded, Braxton Brewing Company in Cincinnati, a lot of German heritage in Cincinnati. Oktoberfest is a very big deal. And so we, of course, have a Fest beer as well. It's actually my favorite beer that we brew. We had some German heritage experience in our brewing team, but I always remember, because it's a lager, so this is, we'll geek out here for a moment. It takes longer to ferment than most. So you start brewing that Fest beer in July for an August release, and it's always like kind of that like turning of the page of summer, at least when I was there. It's like, oh man, we're brewing October fuel. This is like the fall and Oktoberfest are on the horizon.
Well, ours, if you're down in St. Simons, Jacksonville, Brunswick area, our Oktoberfest is the 20th. It's next week. Hope you didn't miss it if it's after. But yeah, I love being able to build like a Meritzen and then also build a Hellas separately as well. And it definitely is a beautiful thing. Our current director of ops and brewing is, he was classically trained in Germany. And he actually opened the Paulaner Brew Pub in New York City.
Very cool.
When it came out, no longer there.
Yeah. I'd be geek out on this all day, but I will bring this back to MarTech begrudgingly a bit. What is there, I'm curious though, is there like one lesson that you've either taken from the brewing space to the B2B tech space or vice versa that you feel like has helped you one way or the other?
What I always am thinking about, even with brewing, like, when someone interacts with our beer, what do I want them to feel? What is their journey of understanding the brand? I really take that very seriously. So when I'm building content strategy for the brewery, it's very much like market media's case studies almost. I'm thinking about what do I want people to think after they've had that experience about us? And one of those things is that, wow, this place has an unusual passion for Mexican lager, for example. And so that's something that is unique. And so what I always stress to folks is make sure that if you have a passion for something, or if you have expertise, or if that's kind of going to be the whole goal of your business, make sure it's represented that way. And make sure if someone had the experience with that, they're going to walk away and say, wow. I mean, we even had somebody on Reddit recently write about us. They said, I'm not surprised that the Mexican lager won the World Beer Cup because the folks down there, it's like a religion for them. And I'm like, that means I did it right. You know, whether it is or isn't, that, you know, that those are the types of things you want to make sure come through. If you're fun and you're, you know, working at your company is great and it's like a super fun environment. It's, I don't know, you're a very active, you know, I was just speaking with a law firm client of mine, a very large law firm in the Western states, and their whole thing is that they're all very active and they all are, you know, triathletes and Spartan and bike team and all that stuff. And everything they write, like, tells their story through that lens. And so more than ever, personalizing content experiences, personalizing marketing, showing people that you know them and making sure that the stuff that you put out couldn't have been put out by anyone else is critical. And so I've learned that by doing, for sure. A lot of breweries who launch sadly in Georgia are struggling to differentiate. And because we have such antiquated laws in Georgia that have been around since, you know, Prohibition era, it's hard if you're not differentiated to grow. And we've seen a tremendous spike in closures. And the question I always ask is, how were they differentiated? And did that come through? And sometimes the answer is yes, sometimes the answer is no, but it's something that is, you know, I've learned. And when I'm talking to other founders, GMs of breweries, I have that same perspective. I'm like, what makes y'all special? It can't just be a name, a fun pun name of a, oh man, that don't go too far. And that's where I think the rubber hits the road. That's where you see winners and losers in that space.
So many micro lessons in there, both for tech and brewing. I think, you know, we at Braxton always talked about so many brands and beer just treated it as their name and logo on a beer label. And it means it has to be so much more than that. And it's an extremely competitive, extremely noisy space now. So yeah, you have to differentiate. So that's really good. Really great stuff. Speaking though of differentiation and noisy spaces, the use of AI in marketing has all of a sudden erupted. And I always share this, even, you know, with your team and with others who, when we're talking about marketing, you guys were using AI before it was cool to use AI. Like, I think sometimes we as a industry think like AI is this brand new technology, and, you know, generative AI, I think, became so widely adopted that we just think when we say AI, that's what we're talking about. But really, it goes much further back than that. And so I'm curious, maybe like, the rise of generative AI, has that made Market Muse's world easier or more difficult? Like, what are the pros and cons that you are seeing of being an early adopter of AI, and how the kind of space has just exploded over the last almost 2 years now?
It has it been great all around? Not so much great all around, because when products are being developed, right, and there's a lot of buzz, it means that money is coming in. And if you're not getting all of that money, then that means that R&D is being done and can be accelerated, you know, chip modernization. You become almost from a builder to a user. If you don't have the hundreds of millions of dollars, or today, $6.9 billion will probably be the end round OpenAI has received. So it's in with their most recent round, and this is early fall of 2024, where people are like lining up to give them, you know, quarter billion dollar checks. But so I think that it's been wonderful in that we built a natural language generation platform. We built we were building content drafts with AI before even like GPT-2. And we were building very high quality. It was so expensive to create those. I mean, and they would take forever. I mean, we had a solution called First Draft, and it would take multiple days to build one draft, and it would cost $40 worth of processing time. So we had to sell that for $100. And at that time, nobody was ready for a draft that had to be edited that cost $100. I mean, literally, that's a product that we had that was not very successful. Having gone through those motions and having gone through that development and gone through the product maturity curve with artificial intelligence, I can confidently say it's enabled me to be a much more industrious, have much more understanding of product management. I mean, on day one, if you threw me into OpenAI product management, I'd have 15 swords and would be flying around like a whirling dervish in there, because the product management there and at Microsoft Azure. And I mean, there's so much opportunity for that to be a magical thing because it's packed by so much technology. It's packed by so much innovation. The types of things that we're going to see come out of Apple, for example, are going to be because they took brilliant minds out of search engine industry. They took brilliant minds out of AI, brilliant minds out of structured data tech, of knowledge graphs, and they put them all on one team. Apple Intelligence is just about to launch, but that's scratching the surface of what they're going to be putting out and the relationships they're able to build. But it's given me the ability to see things very clearly, to learn very fast, to be ahead of the game, understand the product market maturity curves that to expect. And, you know, like I can see kind of an x-ray where the puck's going, and it's allowed me to, you know, think about ways to build things very inexpensively. I mean, one, for example, performing the tasks that it takes for us to build one content plan, for example, which I'm not going to give actual numbers of what it costs now, what it costs then, but we're talking about a factor of 200 times cheaper now than it once was. So I had this stuff spec'd out, but it was impossible to build. Makes no sense, right? Now it's 1/200th of the costs. Massive scale embeddings, for example, text embeddings. I mean, you can basically embed to your heart's content with a commercially available model, and the bill you get is like a cent. I'm not even lying, 1 cent, right? And so like these are things that would have taken forever, and now they're mega fast. A great example of this is OpenAI's 4 Mini released. Even in the past 4 months, certain very, very specific tasks went from costing, let's say, $1 to costing 8 cents. So let's just say you implemented a great solution internally. You have to always stay on top of what open source is there, what options are there. Is that other model, untrained even, uncustomized, going to perform this task good enough? Because you could be in a situation where you could take the cost down 12x of something. Well, what doors does that open up? So I'm in a constant choose my own adventure. What needs to be custom? What needs to be post-tuned or fine-tuned? What can be commodity? What can be open source? And that's only going to get crazier. And my favorite piece of this is that the true openness that we're starting to see this year, being able to actually see the inner workings of how things work, is going to enable a new generation of builders what people perceive building an AI to be and what it actually is a chasm. One is, oh, I've figured out how to press buttons and get something. Good for you. That's cool. Awesome. It's the people who can take why that works and build something else that works that I care about. So it's not that you can use this thing really well, this piece of software well. It's when you can see the, you know, weightings in Llama and be like, okay, cool. Well, because of that, I'm going to build this other thing over here, right? That's where the true innovation occurs. That's what's about to happen with the reasoning solutions and our path to AGI and as a race.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah, I think you're right. There is a chasm between probably what the broader public society thinks of AI and the people actually building with AI and kind of the button pressing versus the modeling. It is interesting on the cost effectiveness. I was on in a group with it's a CEO like monthly group that or a startups that I'm in, and one of them's in the job postings world, broadly speaking. And there he's very technical, and he's building a very sophisticated model for his business. And he mentioned their use of AI. And one of the other CEOs, kind of in an adjacent space, was wondering about building an adjacent technology. He's like, well, what's that costing? Assuming it'd be very expensive. And he pulled up his dashboard and he was spending like 42 cents a month or something, you know, like, and it was just like, we were all expecting this really big number. And it was literally like less than a dollar a month or something. Just absolutely crazy.
It's wild. It's wild. And it's only going to get more wild. You know, we always have to keep in mind though, that commodity pricing and infinite scale are product market. They translate to product market maturity, but they are absolute product market disruptors. Going to a commodity price on these technologies increases the barrier to entry. So we always have to be aware of that, I think.
It's a winner takes all space very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, this is not going to be a winner takes all. It's going to be a spaceships on the ground in ruins and fire, and it, because commoditization and then power. I mean, the saturation in the money gone into this is pretty wild.
Well, so it's getting more cost effective. It's getting faster, and it feels like the needle on. And you mentioned this a little bit, but like the needle on quality and what we are willing to accept as consumers of content. Is it feels like over the last few years, like it's been maybe a little bit more volatile than ever. Maybe not ever. Maybe that's not fair, but it's been very volatile the last 2 years. So what are you seeing at Market News in the kind of evolution of what content quality means with the adoption of all of these new technologies?
Yeah. And so a few years ago, I have piles of webcasts and podcasts where I was, you know, putting the helmet on and going, you know, right now you have to start thinking about the way that quality will evolve when infinite scale is real. So right now one can create infinite content that is mediocre to reasonable. And that means that any manual work that's going into content that doesn't go over that bar is worthless. As painful as that sounds, there is still millions of pages, I don't know the actual number, being built by hand that isn't even as good as what one can build automated, right? And that is just, I mean, torched cash. So that's why you're seeing a lot of disruption in the content space. Where the magic is happening is where people are redefining what it means to build high quality content. And that's what an AI really enables. And so some of the ways that people were thinking about this and now are trying to think about this differently is not just comprehensiveness, right? That was something that we always focused on. Does your content exhibit your expertise, right? Uniquely, not just style, tone, and voice. So it's personalized, but how is it weaving in your personal experience? Does it reflect your CV, your resume, right? Does it illustrate a clear point of view? Are there factual components that only you would know through your expertise? Are there personal anecdotes shown that nobody else could copy, right? So you go through it and building this, I actually heard it called a context library for your business. We call it human in the loop AI, right? But so it's those things where, what are you injecting? And so yesterday, for example, I gave a speech at MakeCon last week. We finally got the videos and the transcripts. So I'm immediately parsing that transcript into chunks and into pieces that tell a story so that I could actually build content plans out of that when I valued that artifact, right? What's the perfect webinar I should give to reinforce that transcript? These things bleed into one another. So when I'm talking about the evolution of content quality, it's understanding your existing authority, right? Where have you great breadth and depth of coverage? Where do you have great content that exhibits expertise and momentum? Where do you have off-page recognition that you're about a thing, right? That authority on that topic should guide you to how much work you need to do, what the next articles you're going to build are. Then you get into comprehensiveness, exhibiting expertise, showing experiences in your content. Is your content also accessible and highly performant? These are things that a lot of people aren't thinking about, but is it fast? Is it structured properly? Is it structured the way a human would have structured and a great editor would have structured it? We're getting into the world where all of these factors must be excellent. Excellent, 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 all across the board for you to have a chance to go to the party.
That's the floor.
And that's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy. I mean, I when we started Market Muse, it was funny. We were one of the first taglines was, we want to rid the world of bad content. And someone was like, no, 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 you can't make your tagline negative. And we're like, we want to set the standard for content quality. Like, cool, man. Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Now I've learned you always, with every story, you always want to have the positive and the negative. And based on your audience, you tell one story or the other. And so even when I'm talking about content quality, I have a positive and a negative. One is if I can tell you that your content's terrible, but you're the one that needs to change it. So you're going to be the hero in your organization, you know? So in this case, it's like, what about what we've done in the past isn't checking those boxes? What aspect, what statistic on the baseball card were we not even thinking about, right? It might be performance, it might be accessibility, it might be content quality, it might be we outsourced this stuff to AI and it's generic, but we call it AI content, so it's not all that important. It's over there on the side of our site, or maybe we call it SEO content, which is the total infinite debasement of the entire industry, which makes me cringe every time. Guess what? All content matters. The bad content, the crappy content that maybe your technical support team put out a knowledge base and doesn't update it. The SEO content over here, those really crummy definitions or that glossary you half-heartedly did, that all impacts each other. They all play in the same boat. They're all contributing to your win and lack of wins. And it hurts. It makes marketers struggle if they love their silos, if they think that attribution is page level, any of these things, that these dogmatic worlds that people live in, they've all been invalidated all at once. And it's truly the evolution of content quality. You're trying to figure out how to implement AI in your organization. While you're trying to figure out how to implement AI in your siloed organization, guess what? The way people are digesting information and evaluating it just went through a quantum leap. If you don't know anything about linguistics, right, or fact checking or journalism, today is the day to learn that. Yeah, forget about your learning how to use your Instant Pot or air fryer. Learn how linguistics works. Learn how journalism works, because it hits you all in the face at once when you say, oh, wow, the technology has gotten to the point where if you, for example, if you replace pronouns, replace words with pronouns at an unusual rate. So if you unnaturally use co-text, which would be like words around it match. If you unnaturally do that, I can see it with very inexpensive software.
Yeah.
So I can see what rhetorical conventions and linguistic conventions you use and whether that's likely to be written by a human or not. And also whether your content has actually exhibited any unique value that no other page has. That's actually economically feasible now when you have, you know, I always call it Ralph Wiggum content. If you're familiar with The Simpsons, the dog went into the house and then the dog went out of the house and the dog peed on the tree and then the dog ate the food. And then, you know, people don't talk that way, right? That's not actually the actual quote, but the evolution of content quality means that like any way you think content can be evaluated, it can be inexpensively. And thus the bar went up from being, hey, this looks like it's written by a human, to it has to be amazing. So the cool thing is, if you're an expert, if you're a journalist, if you're a great writer, you are the most important person in the room. And that's a great time to be alive for me and you. Because, you know, that if you're getting by with weak stuff, you're done.
Two reactions there. I think you're exactly right. So we have noticed a theme in the best content marketers that we work with are former journalists, former teachers, very not classically trained marketers. And that's, I'm a classically trained marketer, so I'm able to say that, I think. And then the linguistics point is so good. I've been at Inbound this week, and I was talking to a marketer, and I said, you described it so much more eloquently, but I think with the rise of generative AI and all the AI created content, what has surprised even me, and I think a lot of people, is that humans are much better at discerning AI written content versus human written content than we all anticipated. And I don't know how to quite put my finger on it of like what that is, but I think you just called it out. It's linguistics. There's some embedded instinctual thing in us all that we are actually much better at discerning crappy AI content versus journalistic human content. That chasm is really powerful.
I think you have to get religion on this now, because AI is about to take a couple more leaps. Yeah. So, I mean, the thing that I'm working on, I'm actually giving a speech on this in a couple of weeks at a keynote at a conference, is how the evolution in content quality analysis and all these factors, you've got to get them now. Like you're late already. I'm sorry, you're late. And if you've read OpenAI's like 01 system card data, I mean, which I'm sure everybody's sitting at home reading this stuff, but that tells the story. Some old processes, it's solving. It's still got a lot of work to do. We're not GI work. We're not seeing the full things that are implemented, but one can get to a world. You got to prepare for the world where artificial intelligence has a knowledge of itself, how it notices that tasks are difficult to solve, impossible to solve without modifying themselves. And so self-modification, when you're looking at agentic tasks, where what an agent does, and you're deciding whether to be persuasive or to misinform, you know, so you have the ability to build amazing content with artificial intelligence that actually is evil. You also have the ability to do it for good and at a level that you've never imagined. So when you get to this world, and I'm not trying to freak people out, but it's like, now look at your crummy definition on your glossary. Those two things they're not even in the same hemisphere anymore. So if that's still what your site is, you're the change agent. I mean, let's make this awesome. Let's make this site just beautiful and amazing. We can't take no for an answer. Like, we got to move. We got to move fast, folks. Let's get as much content as we can into the juice that ultimately exhibits our expertise, tells the story that we know on. That's the stuff that wins right now, because there's so much noise, there's so much stuff you can read, and then there's so much content that AI can consume.
Where you say you're not trying to freak people out, I'm going to invite you to freak people out with our last question that we always ask all of our guests. What is one unpopular opinion you have as it pertains to B2B marketing?
Oh, gosh. I've got so many unpopular opinions. Sadly, most of them end up being accurate when they're unpopular. So if you want to go listen to predicting the Google helpful content update webinar from 2021 and 2022, that was very unpopular when I described how Google was going to choke the neck of the majority of publishers. But yeah, that was very unpopular. Right now, my most unpopular perspective is that the product management at OpenAI will likely destroy them. They continue to exhibit genius level product development and not so genius level product management. And that is very, very unpopular. I'm blown away by the things that they've done. And every day it blows me away. But I am also blown away at the illogical decisions made with respect to basic product management fundamentals, like product market maturity. And then you look at what Microsoft's doing as a partner, an Azure partner, genius, right? And then you look at what Apple's about to do, genius, right level. So I would love nothing more, because of their mission, I would love nothing more for them to get religion on that and start to think critically about, we can be a $1 trillion company. How do we actually become a $1 trillion company? And they aren't a $1 trillion company right now. They will be, but it's gonna be on the back of amazing products, not necessarily amazing AI models. And I'm excited to live. I'll be excited to live through that. They haven't hit it on the nose yet, but gosh, it's gonna be fun to watch. The first AGI model, when it releases, I'll know what to do with it. And so my challenge for everybody listening is, what will you do with it? Because if you don't know, start talking to people, start figuring it out for your business. What will you do when it goes beyond agents? If you don't have anything with agents implemented in your business, you try to start talking to people, get that involved. Because right now you can have a million agents on a million typewriters all talking to each other and being, you know, making your 5 to 10 person company a 5,000 person company. So there's a lot of good that can happen today, but you got to be prepared for the future. So I'd say freaking people out is like, hey, you're probably behind. That's cool. You can get leveled up and learn as much as you can about the paths to AGI.
Well, Jeff, if people want to learn more from you or learn more about Market Muse, what is the best way to do that?
Jeff@marketmuse.com. On Twitter X, Jeffrey_Coyle. On LinkedIn, I respond to everything as long as you're not telling me to buy a link or you don't write something like, I'm very impressed with your computers and technology ability. Just mention the podcast, mention that you heard it. And I love doing so. I'm like making content briefs. Go to Market Muse. We have a free reverse trial, which means you get 7 days free of one of our premium packages. There is no downside there. Build some content briefs, build a content plan, make it magical, then talk to me. And if anyone has any questions about AI or they're worried about using it, they have their CEO said that they shouldn't adopt or any of that type of stuff. I love that stuff. So just give me a call. If anyone knows me, you know me, I try to give. I've learned the number one secret to business is giving. It's all about passion, whether we're drinking a beer or talking about Mistral 7B.
Love that. We are. And that is the full circle moment right there. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Content Cocktail Hour. To all of our watchers and listeners, thanks for joining another episode. Until next time, we'll see you at the same time, same place. Cheers. Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.